KSL at night.
And welcome back to KSL at Night. I'm your host, Greg Skordis, alongside Rusty Cannon. And if you have any breaking news or you want to be involved in breaking news, just text breaking, B-R-E-A-K-I-N-G, to 57500. I set that up, Rusty, a couple days ago, and I get breaking news all the time. It's really interesting. You know, things that you kind of don't expect, and suddenly there you are, including some news today. I don't know. This is heartbreaking news, but
it is.
Another student, this time a student at Roy High School, is caught bringing a gun to school. Says quick action by school resource officer averted a potentially dangerous situation. School officials acted on a tip that a student had brought a handgun to school with him. Now, I don't know why a student would bring a handgun to school. And this one's really troubling because they interviewed the Roy City Police Department and said, you know, you always wonder, how does a student get a gun? You know, and a lot of people have guns. I'm in that category myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have firearms, but boy, you got to lock them up. They interviewed one of the Roy City Police officers who said this about how the student got the gun.
The boy got the weapon by stealing the key to his family's safe.
They only had a key to it, so it wasn't like a keypad. It wasn't necessarily most of the secure safe, in my opinion.
So, Rusty, just in terms of legally, we try to protect our family, our schools, our kids from firearms. And so we encourage people to use a safe, to have a gun safe. I think one that is accessed by a single key, it probably isn't really a gun safe.
No. I mean, if a key is in plain view, what have you, what's the point of the safe, right? I mean,
right. But I also understand this because a lot of people ask me about, well, what are you supposed to do with a gun? Because a lot of people feel, and Utah is one of those stand your ground states, we have the right to firearms, we have a right to have protection, and some people have a firearm near their bed.
Yeah.
Some people have it because some people will tell me this, what good is a firearm to me if an intruder comes, if it's in my safe, if it's in the basement, if I have to do a keypad to get to it? And I completely understand that. But the rules change a little bit when you've got children in the home.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think that there's got to be some higher level of scrutiny, some higher level of care to what parents do when you have firearms in your home. I mean, I have firearms in my home, but they're in a safe. They would be useless to me if somebody came to the house.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't access them in a million years. But I have them. I enjoy them. I just sort of collect them because I think they're fun. I think they're interesting.
So from your perspective as an attorney, where do you draw the line? I mean, as far as parental responsibility, like in this case, it sounds like parents have the guns in a safe, keys in plain view. Access was granted. Apparently a loaded gun was taken to school. Where do you draw the line on parental responsibility at this point?
Yeah, you know, anytime you look at something like that, Rusty, you look at what we call reasonableness. What does a reasonable parent do to protect their citizens, their neighbors from the firearm? And and what reasonable people do is they lock them up. They have them in a secure place. They don't allow people to have them. They're the children to get them. Is it reasonable to have them in a lockbox that's accessible by a key that's visible? You know, that's a closer call. But you know what's really interesting? We recently had this case, the Ethan Crumbly case in Michigan, which, as far as I know, legally is the first time parents have been held criminally responsible for the acts of a mass shooter. We don't see that. And the state of Michigan decided, wait a minute, we're going to file criminal charges against parents.
Yeah.
For the act of Ethan. I think he killed four people in Michigan. Mom went on trial a couple of months ago. She was convicted of four counts of what we call involuntary manslaughter, which is, Utah has a statute called manslaughter, which is a little bit different than involuntary manslaughter, but it's similar. And that crime in Michigan carries 15 years in prison, the same as our manslaughter, 1 to 15.
Yeah.
She was convicted. She got four 15-year sentences. Dad was recently convicted. And here's what one of the kid's parents said at his sentencing to that father.
Not only did your son kill my daughter, but you both did as well. You failed as parents. The punishment that you face will never be enough. It will never bring her back. It will never be a loss that you have suffered, and it will never heal the pain. Your Honor, I request that the maximum sentence be enforced, as it will never come close to the life sentence I was given.
And I think that's exactly what happened, Rusty. I think that the judge gave the father the 4 15-year sentences that was requested.
So those here. Be consecutive sentences?
I think so. I mean, consecutive, concurrent, you know, concurrent. We have different. Yeah, I sure they were consecutive. I'm sure they were one after the other. It's just that when you deal with the prison system, sometimes they don't just 15, 30, you know, 45, 60.
So is this going to set a precedent where, I mean, this seems like a bit of a seismic shift, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And that's a good point, because whether that's going to set a precedent when we come out here to the Wild West, where guns are much more accessible and much more acceptable, it remains to be seen. But certainly I think parents and sometimes we've seen where people who sell firearms or manufacturers of firearms are more and more coming into the crosshairs of civil suits, that type of thing. But in terms of a criminal suit, this is really one of the first ones. And and whether that's going to carry further, I don't know. If you remember the Crumbly case, this kid, I think he was 15, just a young kid. He had all kinds of emotional problems. He was drawing pictures of taking a gun to school. His parents were really nonchalant. The mother, even during her own trial, was very flippant about the whole thing. It didn't bode well for her with the jury, but they were actually brought to school on the day of the shooting. Mom and dad were and said, "Hey, something wrong with your kid." They're like, "Yeah, you know, he's fine. Don't worry about it. He'll be fine." And you know, before they even get to work, they're getting a call that he's got a gun and he's killed four people. So in that case, you know, when we consider the law, the criminal law, Rusty, we have homicide statutes. And our homicide statutes in Utah and Michigan are very similar. We say that if you intentionally cause the death of another person, that's murder. Now, that obviously didn't happen here from the parents' perspective. They didn't intend to cause death. But then we also say almost every state has a manslaughter statute, which states that if you recklessly cause the death, that you're criminally responsible. It's not the same as murder where you get a 20 to life.
Yeah.
It's a manslaughter where you get a 1 to 15. But what we're looking at is, and what a jury would decide in a case like that is, was it reckless conduct on the part of the parents to allow that kid to go to school that day or to give him access to the gun? I think they even bought him a gun, or I don't remember the exact circumstances of it. But the jury in Michigan unanimously agreed, yes, that was reckless conduct, and they've been charged, they've been convicted, and now they're both imprisoned for the conduct of their kid. I mean, he's going to be messed up the rest of his life. I mean, he's doing a life sentence without the possibility of parole, probably, for four homicides, even though he was just a minor. I mean, that kid's never getting out. But yeah, I don't know if it's going to set precedent. I mean, it certainly was bold on the authorities there in Michigan to bring criminal charges against parents for the act of a child. We really don't see that. You know, we really don't see that under our law when kids are, you know, causing harm to others, graffiti, stealing cars, that kind of a thing. But in this case, I think there was just enough misconduct and problems on the part of the parents where the authorities said, we're going to charge you.
So what happens in this Roy case at this point, in your view?
Yeah, well, so this one's a little different because he had a gun. No one was hurt. Law enforcement got in. They stopped him. They seized the weapon. So, and you got to hand it to law enforcement. And I guess it was a school resource officer there in Roy High that just nipped it in the bud right away.
Yeah.
What liability or what do we look at in terms of the parents? I don't know. I mean, it's probably not criminal because nobody was hurt. There was no harm.
Yeah.
But I would think that, you know, I could see maybe people going into their home and saying, you know, maybe we're going to, you know, take your firearms away. I think that'd be a stretch too, but there's got to be some consequence to that. And maybe just the publicity that this is getting or will get will be the consequence that they need.
Yeah, it's a wake-up call.
Yeah, it certainly will be. When we come back after the break, we're going to go up north to Boise, Idaho, and get a take on the Chad Daybell trial. Rusty, that trial started this week. We had opening statements. We had one witness, and we had Adam Small from KSL Radio who was there.